Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD. We come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. We often talk on this show about doing the simplest things first. For this reason, it baffles me why it's so hard to get physicians to properly test thyroid hormones in people who are depressed, fatigued, cold, have GI symptoms, gastrointestinal symptoms, hypertension, insomnia, and are either gaining or losing weight when they shouldn't be. The thyroid was first identified by anatomist Thomas Thornton in 1656. Thyroid hormone, or thyroxine, was identified in the 19th century. So thyroid treatment has been around for two centuries. This shouldn't be hard, particularly when thyroid hormone is bioidentical, matches what your body makes, is very inexpensive. But people go around with thyroid disorders forever before anyone bothers to discover the problem. In the meantime, they give them antidepressants, hypertension medication, acid blockers, sleep medications, weight loss schemes that don't work, all of which are not inexpensive and don't change the underlying cause, thyroid imbalance. Today, I will educate you on what and how to look for thyroid disorders. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Jeff Fawcett, PhD.
Thank you, Lena. Bisphenol A, BPA for short, is a common chemical used to harden plastics and make resins used for dental fillings, among many other commercial applications. It's also an endocrine disruptor. In a recently published report, female rats exposed to BPA as pups at levels below EPA standards developed polycystic ovaries as adults. The hormone profiles for these rats were high in estrogen and testosterone and low in progesterone. On the same note, the Endocrine Society is having its annual meeting this week in San Diego. At a symposium titled Endocrine Disruptors of Reproductive Function, research will be presented showing that women with polycystic ovary syndrome have higher body burdens of BPA. One of the more surprising exposures to BPA was revealed in a review released last week by the organization Environment and Human Health. They found the green building standards established by the Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design Program, LEED, focus on energy efficiency, but not on health. It was friendly criticism, but nevertheless found that a construction project could receive the highest LEED designation possible while exposing inhabitants to BPA-containing materials. The green building standards simply don't address those issues. For a hostile criticism of industrial practices that expose people to endocrine disruptors, we can still remain within the energy economy. The documentary Gasland is about a practice called fracking, short for hydraulic fracturing. It's a method for extracting methane, that is, natural gas, from rock by blasting it with water, sand, and chemicals. The waste from this process gets into the water supply and into the air. Theo Colburn, the Rachel Carson of Endocrine Disruptors, estimates that of the 278 chemicals used, virtually all have known health risks and almost half are known endocrine disruptors. The fight over exposures to these dangers is an old one, local people trying to protect their communities against energy companies. You won't be surprised to know that special legislation by the U.S. Congress, desperate to support domestic energy resources, especially clean energy such as natural gas, exempted fracking from the Safe Drinking Water Act and the Clean Water Act. Seeing Theo Colburn's name in the news about this injustice caused me to wonder what we've learned about endocrine disruptors since publication of her groundbreaking book, Our Stolen Future. She talks about the toxicity of BPA in her book, and we're still struggling to get it properly regulated, even though it's become something of a legislative and regulatory cause celeb. So we've learned, once again, that the path to humane regulation of toxins is long and torturous. Here's what else we've learned. Endocrine disruptors are everywhere. Every human being on the face of the earth has been exposed to them. Everyone. Everyone is likely to have at least 100 chemicals in their blood or sequestered in their tissues that would not have been found there a century ago. every child born in the last 30 years was exposed in the womb. Endocrine disruptors are potent at low doses. The old way of thinking in toxicology was that there is some dose below which there is no effect. But this way of thinking used poisoning as its model so that a safe dose was one that did not cause an acute response. What the science of endocrine disruptors has shown us is that a very small dose at a specific stage in an organism's development can have a profound effect on its viability and health. Endocrine disruptors affect every chemically mediated signaling system, not just sex hormones. Thyroid signaling is affected. Retinoids are affected. These work during fetal development to differentiate tissues. Glucocorticoids are affected. These affect energy metabolism, stress response, body mass regulation, and the central nervous system. The list of endocrine disrupting chemicals continues to expand dramatically. The list now includes persistent organic halogens, such as dioxins and PCBs, food additives, such as BHA, pesticides, such as atrazine, phthalates, and metals, such as arsenic. Endocrine disruptors affect health with long latency periods. Exposed as a fetus, the adult will suffer the health effects. Exposed as an adult, subsequent generations will suffer. The study I cited as an example earlier, that exposure to BPA increase the risk of polycystic ovaries. Ominously, this area is one of the least studied. Endocrine disruptors research is biased in favor of finding no association with health risks. Tracking people's exposures and health outcomes outside a controlled experimental environment is a problem. Such a setup is inherently biased towards producing a false negative, that is, showing no association when in fact there is one. Of course, this emphasizes our personal and community experiences as involuntary test subjects in the uncontrolled experiments now being conducted by industry. But that doesn't count as science. This all sounds like bad news. It is. But there's good news. There are people working hard for better regulation and against production of endocrine disruptors. All good, but it's defensive. It's no. Where do we find yes? One of the basic principles we promote on this show is to do the simplest things first. Simplest, not easiest. We are inundated by endocrine disruptors because of the way in which production is organized, with health effects not even a consideration so far as producers are concerned, unless it's forced on them. But we are capable of changing that. How? There are many ways. Here's just one. The U.S. Social Forum takes place this week in Detroit. Its motto is, "Another world is possible, another U.S. is necessary." Yes. A transcript of this editorial is available on the blog at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett is an environmental economist, writer, and health educator who produces this show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. So before we start today's very information-dense show about thyroid, I have a story, partially because I think it's really important when I do have a show that's very information dense that you just allow the information to wash over you and don't get tense because there's a lot of information. So here's a story to start out with, which is not about thyroid directly. While we were cleaning up our storage area, Jeffrey disturbed a roof rat nest here in the woods. Inside, many small, blind, hairless, squealing gummy bears. Nature imparts in us the ability to value new life. We tried to get a wildlife rescue to take them, and no one would. They told us to put them back near the nest for the mother. She never came. The next day, we had many almost frozen, dehydrated babies to care for. We searched for information. Raising neonates is much easier for a mother rat whose body is 100 degrees and has the right infant formula at her breast. They need nursing, cleaning, stimulating so they can poop, and heat, just the right amount, not too much. Each day we lost some. We grieved, buried, bowed. Now we're down to 3. This apparently is unusually good. It's rare to have this many survive. 2 are really strong, 1 is still struggling. They need food every 2 to 3 hours. So last night, exhausted physically and emotionally, stumbling around the messy house, walking on the pant legs of my sweatpants, I had a very powerful realization. This is what life is. We don't know what we're doing. We stumble around, just babies ourselves, trying, failing, and hopefully learning. If we let ourselves, our hearts crack open and we join the world. Not doing it right, just trying, failing, and learning. Grabbing for the dropper and sucking down nutrients and love when it's available. How important it is to treasure the new life within ourselves every day, so fragile, so precious. How much it teaches us. So now today's topic, which is thyroid. Your thyroid gland, as you may know by now, because I have done shows on this before, is at the base of your neck, right above your collarbone, and it's shaped a little bit like a butterfly. But please don't reach down and squeeze it, because it's extremely delicate tissue, and for some of you, it's prone to inflammation. It's the conductor of your metabolism, and it works in concert with all your other hormones, all of them, every single one, including your stress hormones that you get produced in the adrenal cortex, and all of your sex hormones. All of this, as Jeffrey just pointed out in his editorial, are easily damaged by stress and environmental factors. And in damage to the thyroid is inherited. It runs in families. When people are damaged by environmental stressors, by pollutants and radiation and various things, that damage is inherited. It's an inherited trait. And thyroid is very important for fetal development. So the environment is causing us to have an epidemic of thyroid disease. It's just really a lot of it. Now, clearly, if you don't have your thyroid hormone, there's actually several hormones. If they don't work and your other hormones aren't balanced, they will interfere with the thyroid. So all of these things have to be balanced with each other. And although it sounds intricate, which it is, but what's important is that you have sufficient production of the thyroid hormones to keep your endocrine system in balance. Okay, so the very beginning sort of stuff to know is that thyroid synthesis, the making of the hormone, is dependent on iodine. So there are actually two thyroid hormones. There's T4, which is the first one that your thyroid makes, and then 40% of it is converted to an active form of thyroid called T3, which has the word iodine in its name. The conversion is in your liver and spleen, so clearly your liver also has to be in reasonable shape. And, you know, historically, where iodine wasn't in the diet, you know, because of seafood, for instance, people developed severe thyroid deficiencies and mental retardation. And this has been going on probably for the last 2 centuries until people start to figure this out. Iodine is, of course, now added to salt, although I don't necessarily recommend eating commercial salt. It's also in your multivitamin. If you take a multivitamin, it's one of the reasons for taking a multivitamin. And there's a little bit in seaweed and a little bit in kelp. The tricky thing here is that, like a lot of other things, proper dosing is important, because too much iodine will suppress the thyroid. In fact, that's how hyperthyroid or Graves was treated before the antithyroid medications were produced. Lucky for us. But so 150 micrograms of iodine is a roughly normal dose of iodine. I would like to recommend, I see increasingly more and more products are using potassium iodide, iodide, iodide. Potassium iodide is a preferred form of iodine. It's I think it's a salt form. It's a potassium salt. And so it's not as irritating as regular, you know, and there's been, of course, controversy about using kelp for there's trace amounts of arsenic and kelp and blah, blah, blah. But it really is a question of balance. And if you can get potassium iodide instead, that's the one. And you, but you have to make sure you're not taking more than 150 micrograms a day. Just to clue you in, you're listening to your own health and fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm here with Jeff Fawcett, but I'm doing a show alone today talking about thyroid disorders. Now, along with nutrient deficiencies, so we just discovered that iodine, a lack of iodine in your thyroid does not work, but other nutrient deficiencies will affect it as well. And if your general nutrient milieu is lousy, you won't, you know, if you don't have enough protein in the diet, for instance, if you're not taking a balanced mineral supplement, it's hard, in my opinion, and it's not just my opinion, to get everything you need in the proper balance without taking a multivitamin. I really recommend people take at least a multivitamin and some extra vitamin C. But if your diet is really poor and you're not getting enough of the essential nutrients, some of the minerals, for instance, are very important, along with iodine, selenium is very important for conversion of thyroid hormone to the active form. So the other things that adversely affect the thyroid hormone production is lots of medications, anticonvulsants, antidepressants, I mean, not just lots and lots of medications, lots of lithium, for instance, other lots of drugs. Stress is really nasty for the thyroid. In fact, the presentation of thyroid disorders may run in your family, and you may do all right and not get it if you take care of yourself, but if you are under prolonged physical and emotional stress, it will probably present. So stress and all its hormones that are developed can be potential for causing thyroid hormone production to not work. Too much estrogen, mostly estradiol, strongest estrogen, especially synthetic estradiol, seems to compete on the receptor sites for thyroid and knocks it off and makes it really hard. So when women are very high estrogen, or when men pick up estrogen and it's not balanced with their testosterone, or if people are taking estrogen and it's too much, it's not well balanced with progesterone or testosterone, that can interfere. Heavy metals like mercury are really hard on the thyroid. All the things that Jeffrey talked about, all the chemical pollutants, the plastics, all of those things, vinyl chloride, solvents, and huge thing is cigarette smoke, which produces all kinds of formaldehyde and other nasty chemicals in heavy metals. Cigarette smoke just by itself, though, just the smoke, is so oxidative and irritating that it can precipitate thyroid disease. And radiation, all forms of radiation. So one possible cause for there being such an epidemic of thyroid hormone disorders in my generation, I'm a baby boomer, is that we were exposed to lots of x-rays and medical things. And then there was also nuclear testing was still taking place. People were having their feet x-rayed and Schuster. I mean, there's just lots of radiation around. And our parents were exposed to enormous amounts of it, and they passed on that damage. Now, women's hormone balance is, you see a lot of thyroid disease in women, and it happens in men too. It's just that men's hormones tend to make it less obvious. One of the really clear symptoms of thyroid hormone being low is that people's hands and feet are chilly, even to the point of having like numb white fingertips. So cold hands and feet, even when it's a relatively reasonably warm day, is a symptom. And men, because they have testosterone, which warms them up, tend not to always know that they're low in thyroid, and it still can be happening. But women's hormones are on such a tripwire. I mean, they're so... The balance is so critical in women's hormones. If the estrogen, again, is too high, then progesterone, adding progesterone really helps. And sometimes that's the problem, is just that the estrogen is too high. Again, if men's testosterone is low, their thyroid hormones may not work well. And again, if the sex hormones in general get very low and the thyroid gets low, which often happens, then nothing works well. It all needs the other to work well. And some of the most provocative interactions happen between cortisol and thyroid and other catecholamines, which is a fancy word for stress hormones. Too much or too little really interferes with the conversion of T4 to the active form of T3. So stress is enormously provocative for thyroid imbalance. Just huge. Very quickly, that what happens is that you can't convert, as I said, you can't convert T4 to T3 if there's too much or too little cortisol. And we've talked endlessly about too little cortisol, your pulse is low, your blood pressure is very, very low, you're very tired. Too much and you start gaining weight in the trunk, mostly. That's where the weight goes, not evenly distributed. And you're probably having trouble sleeping and various things. But you might have a lot of energy, but it's kind of a metabolic disruption to have cortisol stay high. The body doesn't want it. It's very toxic to the heart and things. Now, here's the problem, is the testing. Honestly, even after I read research that's on the web and look at things to try to get a sense of what are they reading? You know, why aren't they reading the Merck manual? Why aren't they reading their own textbooks on endocrinology, the testing is done rather cheaply, and it's done. They depend on thyroid-stimulating hormone, which is produced in your pituitary. The brain is conducting your hormones. There's other pituitary hormones, stimulatory hormones that are made for your sex hormones, but thyroid-stimulating hormone, TSH, is not a reliable test. This signal hormone goes up when thyroid is low, but stress, or if you're actually taking thyroid hormone and it has T3 in it, has the active form of thyroid in it, as is the case with porcine, you know, thyroid from animals, which works quite well, incidentally, for those of you who are going, ew. So if you're taking a thyroid replacement, they say thyroid medication, it's really thyroid replacement that has T3 in it, it will artificially lower, both stress and T3 will lower your TSH. And then women in menopause or men in andropause, any of that can sort of hose up the TSH levels and give you a false read. However, if they do it and it's 2.5 or above, the latest updated research says anything above 2.5, and there's too much stimulatory hormone being made, which means that the thyroid is not producing. And we do see situations where people have enormously high TSHs, and then you have to kind of think what's going on with the pituitary, and that's a whole nother show. So what I'm suggesting, as I always do, is because I've seen this over and over again in people that I test, you know, I can test through ZRT labs, and it's a blood spot test. You don't use saliva for thyroid hormones. Is that you test T4 and T3 separately. And you do them in the free, not total forms. This is the levels that are, it's a small fraction, it's free, it's not bound to red cells in the blood and things like that. There's something called thyroid binding hormone, which is increased by, guess what, too much estrogen, again, men too, stress, and liver problems. So you can have all kinds of thyroid binding hormone that takes your total T4 and T3 and hides it so that your levels look normal, and then you're still symptomatic, and then they finally agree to test your T4 and your T3 free, and you're not right, you're not low. Many insurance companies will test free T4, but then they won't do T3. And ironically, you know, if you only did the T3, you'd probably, if it's free T3, you probably know better what's going on, because there wouldn't be any T4 to speak of if it wasn't, you know, the T3 is coming from somewhere. So it's very hard to get doctors to do the free T3 and the free T4. Now, if your test is hypo or hyper, if it's too high or too low, that's not where you stop. You need to find the cause. Before you start doing any kind of treatment, you need to know what you're treating. So hypothyroid, what if you show up hypothyroid? Is it time immediately to start taking thyroid hormone? Well, maybe, but maybe not. I mean, have you just been ill? Were you just sick? Did you just go through a horrible, stressful period? Are you just eating really badly? Do you have all kinds of nutrient deficiencies? Are you not taking any kind of multivitamin with iodine? Are you eating lots of soy, which is a goitrogen? All these different thyroid diseases tend to cause swelling in the thyroid gland, and people get a goiter, swollen neck. So soy is a goitrogen. And additionally, if you're testing low and you said, well, no, actually, things are fine, I'm not stressed out, and my sex hormones aren't too high, my estrogen's okay, blah, 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 then the next step is to rule out that you don't have autoimmune thyroiditis, which is named after the man who discovered it, Hashimoto. So it's Hashimoto's, spelled like it sounds, H-A-S-H-I-M-O-T-O-S, Hashimoto's, a condition where the thyroid is attacked by antibodies, sometimes resulting in hypothyroid because the body thinks the tissue is foreign. There are many theories. It's certainly caused by, in some cases, eating soy really can cause this to happen. And it's also inherited in families, and it all the usual things that I mentioned cause it. But it's sometimes food allergies because it's attacking your thyroid hormone, which is a protein. So there may be a protein that you're allergic to that it's getting confused going up to the thyroid. Now, it might be worth taking a side trip for a moment to talk about replacing thyroid hormone before we go on to talking about hyperthyroid and talking more about Hashimoto's and Graves', which are specific thyroid diseases. Most people just have low thyroid, and it does pop up as people age. And so let's talk for a moment about thyroid replacement, remembering that when people say thyroid medication, because people will often, you know, clients will do a session with me and they'll talk about, I don't want to take a medication the rest of my life. This is a replacement hormone. This is, do you turn on the lights after dark and read? I mean, this is adding something to improve the quality of your life and your aging. It can be done delicately. It doesn't have to be, it's not an artificial hormone. It's replacing something you're not making well. And as I said, you can look at your nutrient deficiencies with hypothyroid. You can also look to using tyrosine, which is, I think, tyrosine. Okay, I got it. Tyrosine, which helps the body pick up the iodine, helps to take up the iodine. This is not something you do if you have a thyroid disease, because you're going to be doing something different with a thyroid disease. But if you have low, you can try this. You can try all those things. But the answer to the question of, do I have to take a thyroid medication the rest of my life, is it's a replacement hormone. If you take it, it will, if you take the right amount, it will support your thyroid and you'll feel better. If you take a little too much, it will begin to suppress your own production, which isn't necessarily bad, but it does mean you're working backwards. So you do have to keep checking to see if what your levels are looking like and how you're feeling. Suppression is a treatment for some conditions. But if you need or want to go off the thyroid at some point, you just do it very, very slowly so you wake up your thyroid and get it going again. It doesn't kill the thyroid. So there are several replacements, and some of them are synthetic forms of thyroxine or T4. I don't care for them. They're the most commonly prescribed ones. Synthroid, levothyroxine, Levoxyl. Of those, I prefer Levoxyl because it doesn't have lactose in it, and many people with thyroid problems are also food allergic. These synthetic forms of T4 are bioidentical. The problem is that our thyroids make a whole bunch of other thyroid hormones, including the active form of thyroid, and some others that we don't even test for, like T1, which helps with muscle strength. The one that really replaces everything is the pork thyroid. And the best brand and oldest brand and most stable and reliable brand is Armour, ARMOUR. And Armour thyroid was recently, along with all the other pork thyroids, and before that, a whole bunch of the other thyroid synthetic forms have been, the FDA has been pouncing on them and looking at every paper, all their paperwork, and because pork thyroid is biological, they've been really on their case. So for a period of time, Armour has been less available, but it is back on the market, and it is measured differently than synthetic thyroid. Synthetic thyroid is measured in micrograms, and Armour thyroid is measured in grains or milligrams. So I'm going to need to take a quick musical break. When I come back, I'll finish discussing the different forms of replacement, because there's a few other I can talk about, and talk about why Armour is recommended. So stay tuned. We'll continue this discussion about thyroid. If you stay with me, here's some music to consider. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD. There's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our archive, CD copies, and lots more. Our book also, Your Own Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. There is incidentally a Facebook page for Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health, and also for Your Own Health and Fitness. You can find all of it linked on our page, our regular website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, with everything spelled out. And you can call us at 707-874-2772 or email us at admin, at yourownhealthandfitness.org, again, with everything spelled out. So the important thing to remember about these thyroid replacements is that although they are bioidentical, the pork thyroid, Armour being the brand I like the best, is the one that contains the most subtle balance of thyroid hormones that the others do not replace. Additionally, there is something called Thyrolar, which attempts to mix T3 and T4 together and eliminate some of the other more subtle hormones that are in desiccated pork thyroid, where they take the thyroid hormone out. And incidentally, these products are, you know, they're not organic, but it's, you know, it's a problem. There are some companies who are looking at trying to produce an organic product, but these hormones are removed. So the material is well processed in a way that would remove contaminants of any kinds, and it's been used forever. It's like almost the original thyroid hormone, and Armour itself, although its company that produces it has been changed, has been around forever. The formula is the same. It doesn't have a lot of provocative binders in it as some of the others do. There's also a synthetic T3 called Cytomel, C-Y-T-O-M-E-L. Some doctors will add Cytomel to T4. Most patients feel jittery on it and don't care for it. Some people do famously on it, and people are extraordinarily different. So even though I'm saying Armour, every once in a while I work with someone who does better on Levoxyl. So go figure. It's interesting to note that compound pharmacists who can compound thyroid hormone in capsules without binders don't recommend that for their families. When their families need thyroid, they want Armour. That's the one they recommend, and I got this from an insider. There are other brands of pork thyroid. There's Westroid, which has some lactose in it, so people should be careful about that if there's a problem for that. A lot of people can't handle lactose. And there is Natroid, which I've not seen people do well on. I can't really comment more than that, except to see I've not seen people do well. I've seen people, especially people with thyroid disease, do better on Armour. So that's my two cents on the replacement hormones. Let's move quickly, if we can, through thyroid disease, which it's a shame to go quickly, and I may go back and do a show where we just talk about specific thyroid diseases and their treatment. There is a woman who's written a very, very good book. I agree with almost everything in the book. There's a few things I would always, you know, I'm always going to have my own opinions about things. So, But it's really a good book. It's called Graves' Disease. This is for hyperthyroid, specifically Graves' Disease, although there's so much information about thyroid in general in it that it's actually worth a read. Her name is Elaine A. Moore, spelled with two R's, M-O-O-R-E. Two O's, I'm sorry, two R's. I haven't slept well. I've been feeding rats, as you know. Elaine A. Moore, M-O-O-R-E, Graves' Disease, A Practical Guide. And she does talk about, she's the only person who's done this, talk about alternative ways of treating Graves' Disease, which is very difficult to treat. Now, let's start off briefly by saying that if you test hyperthyroid, too much thyroid hormone, they do a TSH, it's really suppressed. First of all, if that's all they've done, that's not good. That's not going to, that could be stress. It could be anything. So make them go back, if you can do that, or to work with somebody else to make sure, to have it tested to see what the two thyroid hormones are actually doing. And then if they are really high and you're also shaking and your bowels are loose and you're losing weight and you're out of breath and just feel homicidal most of the time, very irritable, you're probably hyperthyroid, you're shaky, test it. Now, remember that you can have hyperthyroidism. This is kind of called a thyroid storm. It can be a transient situation from an infection. So don't assume that that needs to be treated. It may be possible just to slow it down without taking any medication or anything. You want to rule out antibodies for both Hashimoto's, because Hashimoto's will cause low thyroid in some people, but it can cause a transient hyperthyroid, and Graves. And Graves' antibodies are attacking the TSH mechanism, and Hashimoto's is attacking the thyroid in general. But both of them, you know, they have to be ruled out. You can't start treating somebody for something without knowing what you're doing. Now, also, as I said, medications can interact with the thyroid. So there are many reasons, you know, especially also if people are doing funny things with iodine, too, you know. But everything can result in a swollen neck. And don't leave that, or a feeling of fullness in the neck. Don't leave that. Get somebody to test. And if you don't want to go to a doctor, you may be able to get even an acupuncturist or a health educator to test. If nothing more serious, so that's hyperthyroidism, right? So test it before you treat it. If nothing more serious is found in hyperthyroidism, and it's sometimes even with a transient hyperthyroid, you can try a protein-rich diet. You can add in a multivitamin, which adds iodine. Sometimes you'll get a transient hyperthyroid condition from an iodine deficiency. So remember, about 150 micrograms is about it. Don't overdose. Selenium and zinc help with conversion to T3. And then I mentioned tyrosine, T-Y-R-O-S-I-N-E. So your nutrient density and your save your health. And did you just have some radiation? And are you working around a lot of wireless stuff, which is making you feel hyper and all that stuff? Okay, I said these are going to be brief descriptions of these things. And if people do want to hear more in depth, I may get Elaine Moore on the air and we can dig, you know, roll up our sleeves and talk about these diseases. You can email me at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out, if that's something you want. Hashimoto's, which is really, really common and pops itself up a lot in either during puberty, or during menopause, or 30-year-olds get it also presenting under stress. Very common, runs in families. When a doctor palpates, you don't do this yourself or you'll damage the thyroid. You palpate, feel the thyroid. If you find nodules or any kind of enlargement, you need to test for thyroid antibodies, particularly the ones that are related to Hashimoto's. One of them is called TPO, T as in Tom, P as in Paul, O as in Oscar. It stands for thyroid peroxidase. It's a protein that gets high when there's antibodies. you also can test for microchromosomal antibodies, M-I-C-R-O, micro, chrome, C-R-O, I'm sorry, C-H-R-O-M-O, and then somal, S-O-M-A-L, microchromosomal, all one word, M-I-C-R-O-C-H-R-O-M-O-S-O-M-A-L, antibodies. The most effective treatment, and I know this intimately and also from learning from doctors who have been treating Hashimoto's for longer than most people have recognized it as a problem, is to gently take the work away from the thyroid by adding in thyroid hormone really slowly to avoid increasing inflammation until the thyroid gland stops trying to make thyroid. This is a suppression, not killing the thyroid, just suppresses it and it gets to rest, decreases the swelling, the inflammation, and lowers the antibodies. It also protects you from developing thyroid cancer. And if you have nodules, they usually start to shrink when you do this. So autoimmune thyroid problems, again, are usually triggered by stress, hormone imbalances, soy, exposures, environmental exposures, and a hereditary trait. And in my experience, Armour brand pork thyroid, believe me, I couldn't even get these guys on the show, let alone have a relationship with them financially. I just have seen this work over and over again. It seems to work best here. So now we have, beyond hyperthyroid, which often is transient, beyond Hashimoto's, we have something more complex, which is Graves' disease. And that's why this book, Graves' Disease, A Practical Guide, is a helpful thing to have if you're facing this. Graves is very complex. It's also very hard to treat without using conventional medicine. I do believe it's possible to do. It's not easy to do. It's also autoimmune in nature. As I said, it's attacking the production, the whole thing that produces, it's the TSH, the thyroid-stimulating hormone mechanism that gets attacked by antibodies. So it has a very specific antibody system that you need to test for, and doctors generally know which one it is. It presents when all the usual influences are present. It comes up, again, under stress, exposure, real bad environmental exposures, hormone imbalances, high estrogen, nutrient deficiencies, a lack of iodine often can trigger this, but particularly in women, and we see it a lot in women, the hormone balance, too much estrogen, not enough progesterone, stress, and smoking. Smoking is huge for tripping off Graves' disease. People who have Graves' disease must never smoke. If you find that you have it, stop no matter what you do. You can't really quiet the situation down until you stop. Now, the common conventional practices are, they used to do this with Hashimoto's until they found out it didn't work well, is to remove the thyroid. Well, that's a very tricky operation. It sometimes causes people to lose their voices. And it doesn't go well. I mean, people do not feel well without their thyroid. It's really, really, really traumatic. Now, obviously, if you have thyroid cancer and they can't get the piece out with the cancer and on, you can't preserve any of it, you may have to remove it, but you try not to. And in Graves, you don't have to. So the next thing they say, there's radioactive iodine. Well, radioactive iodine, you're not even supposed to be near anybody else in the world, you know, when this is going on. You're supposed to protect people from exposure to your excrement, you know, so if you urinate, you're supposed to not be, you know, it's just, should give you some indication that you're being exposed to too much radiation. It causes huge health problems. Elaine Moore in her book goes on and on and on about how her own health was destroyed by doing radioactive iodine. It's not benign, and it leaves people much sicker than they were to begin with, and they never completely recover. So it's absolutely, I would say very strongly, don't do that. So the last choice for conventional medicine is to use the anti-thyroid medications. Sometimes, I mean, in my experience, my observation of seeing people after, this can work. But if you look up these medications and you look at the usual things, like the nutrients they destroy and what the dangers are, it's always bad. It's never a good moment. Still, that said, I have seen people do okay after thyroid after they use the thyroid suppressant hormones, not hormones, medications. But they often have to be followed, or even in some cases, endocrinologists will even use a replacement thyroid simultaneously with the anti-thyroid drug, because people tend to get really low thyroid. You're listening to your own health and fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, Jeff Fawcett sitting close by, and I'm doing a show today about thyroid. So the important, now again, I'll mention this book, Graves' Disease, A Practical Guide by Elaine A. Moore, M-O-O-R-E, and she includes some alternative treatments. But be sure that what you have is Graves. Be sure that you have the proper antibody test for Graves before you try any of this. So she does discuss, actually, would you find it in here, in the section on iodine, alternative treatments? In the, thanks. She discusses many other things, and one of the things is that she discusses the use of iodine dosing to kill the thyroid, to literally just paralyze the thyroid. And once you do that, it doesn't come back usually. That's usually it. So, and it's very, very tricky to do, but it was the treatment of choice before before there were medications, anti-thyroid medications. And the problem with doing it is that when you start adding in iodine, you're also taking a chance that you're going to precipitate a thyroid storm. So it's, you know, people with thyroid disease of both sorts, both Hashimoto's and Graves, some Hashimoto's patients can't take iodine at all because it starts stimulating the thyroid, and what you're doing is you're trying to suppress the thyroid, quiet it down. So some people can't take iodine. And with Graves, they're very sensitive to iodine, and even a slight excess can aggravate or induce hyperthyroidism. So you want, in this case, you'd be using potassium iodide, which is also called SSKI, and it is available only by prescription. It's sometimes in weaker forms available, not in solution for use in disinfecting stuff. But this indeed was what they used in the early days before the anti-thyroid drugs. And its primary benefit is its ability to stop thyroid hormone release from the thyroid, and it quickly reduces the amount of hormone present in circulation. It also decreases iodide transport into the cell and inhibits the synthesis of thyroid hormone. So this is a transient two-day inhibition, and really has to be done very carefully, probably with somebody helping you, watching out for you and helping you figure it out. And I think certainly not without reading this book. One of the disadvantages, as I said, is that you can overdose and you can have some discomfort in your mouth or throat and headache, soreness, eye irritation, swelling of the eyelids. It can also, as I said, cause a thyroid storm. So you have to be very, very careful. And then some people are allergic to iodine, although that's pretty rare. There are, you know, as I talked about, sometimes with Graves, if you just add back the things that are missing in your supplement program, you can get this to quiet down. So, and there are issues about looking at just generally what you're taking, obviously avoiding allergic foods, watching out for, I mean, herbal medicine works too. You just have to be working with somebody who really knows what they're doing, because the symptoms of Graves are very profound and somewhat dangerous, because your heart starts to go very, very fast. This is one situation where the cardiac symptoms of too much thyroid can be dangerous. Your heart, it's too long. It's going on too long. Your heart rate is too fast, too long. If somebody has a thyroid storm, it's not dangerous. You have a brief period where your heart is pounding a lot, and it's not prolonged. But if it's prolonged and your metabolism is just running like it's on fire, if that goes on, you start leaching nutrients out of your bones. you start having losing your bone mass. You'll lose your muscle mass. Your stomach won't be working. People are vomiting. I mean, they're shaking. It's a very difficult condition to treat. And I do believe, and she has case histories in her book, that it's possible to treat without using dangerous medications and having it out and all the rest of it. Now, I'm also, and this is very anecdotal, I'm also aware of some homeopathics at work. And the interesting story here is that along with rat pups, I now also have some cats that are becoming elderly, and not extreme elderly, but one of them developed what it looks like is a transient hyperthyroidism. And I kept saying, isn't it possible that it's transient? And the vet kept saying that never happens. But his pulse was high, wasn't insanely high, but it was high. He was very hungry, and he also had problems with the kidneys. And I work with a homeopathic veterinarian in New Mexico who I've had on the show, Don Hamilton. You can search our show list for him. And he has a book called Homeopathic Care for Cats and Dogs. And he's very good. And he suggested that it might be possible that what's happening is that the thyroid is trying to compensate for the kidney problem. So it's speeding up the thyroid to try to get the kidney to work better. And so what we did was we used a homeopathic remedy called Lophophytum Leandri. It's spelled Lophophytum, second word, Leandri, Lophophytum Leandri. And it was amazing. I mean, it worked. It totally worked. I couldn't leave him on it too long because eventually it started to cause some other symptoms because his thyroid backed down and got normal again. This is not supposed to happen, but it did. Now, some people, if you Google and look this stuff up, which again, you know, now Google is becoming so commercial that it's very hard to know what good information is there. But I noticed that some people use Lophophytum Leandri in concert with the homeopathic version of thyroid, which is thyroidinum. Is that how you pronounce that? Thyroidinum?
Yes.
Yes. It is thyroidinum. It's always in Latin. Don didn't think that this was a brilliant idea. He thought it was better to do these things separately. But the Lophophytum worked, and now we're working on helping his kidneys. And there does seem to be a relationship. And his thyroid has stayed normalized. His weight normalized. It was quite extraordinary. And so, and Lophophytum Leandri is also used on humans. I think the thyroidinum is better for people who maybe are borderline low thyroid and feel too jittery on thyroid hormone. Sometimes using a homeopathic form of thyroid will ease it in. Or if you're in the process of trying to increase your thyroid and get used to dosing yourself and your thyroid is inflamed, like in Hashimoto's, the thyroidium may help transition you slowly and help you with the symptoms. Now, for hyperthyroid again, remember that vegetables, this is another thing I did with Oscar, my lovely Oscar, big orange tabby, I mixed in, and at first he accepted this, vegetables from the Brassia family, raw. They have to be raw because they have, and them along with other foods, have goitrogens in them that slow the thyroid. But you have to be careful that what you're treating is hyperthyroid that's not transient because you don't want to just go nuts here. So, you know, all the cabbage and cauliflower and broccoli and all that stuff, if it's eaten raw, we're not talking about fermented, sauerkraut won't do this, but absolutely raw, they will have a suppressant effect on the thyroid. And in fact, some of the supplements that are being sold to help with estrogen metabolism have these in them too, and you have to be careful what you're doing to your thyroid. If you're using too much, if you eat cooked vegetables, that's not an issue. It's not going to be a problem. But you can also look at slowing the thyroid by using goitrogens, you know, raw goitrogens in your diet. But, you know, again, be careful you know what you're treating, and if you're treating Hashimoto's, that's not going to be a good moment. There are herbs also that can be used, but I would not do that without the help of a herbalist who knows what they're doing. And then, you know, I want to go back to this essential issue, which is very important, which is that all of these hormones have a relationship to each other. So when you're treating with looking at hormone balance in general, like whenever you're dealing with thyroid issues, you want to check the sex hormone milieu. You want to see if things are balanced, because progesterone is a powerful means of releasing this sort of lock that estrogen in men and women can have on thyroid at the receptor level, at the tissue level. The other thing is that aside from overdosing on your sex hormones, for instance, to get you crazy and mess with your thyroid, if you overdose on thyroid, that can be an issue too. It's not a good weight loss drug. If you take more than you need of thyroid, you actually throw yourself into a stress response, and you may actually start retaining fluid and gaining weight. Your body may go nuts. So it's not true that if you want to lose weight and you're taking thyroid, and you should automatically increase it, unless your levels of free T3 and free T4, there's some room to play with, because the range is so huge on these tests, these blood tests, and they vary from lab to lab, but it gives you a huge range, and people feel extremely different at different levels. So as with all hormone replacement, you can't come up with a normal range because it's huge. You can just be sure that you're not surpassing the expected normal range, especially if you're seeing symptoms. So some people will feel different replacing at a low level or a middle level or a high level, but you must really go by both the symptoms and the person's test. But you do test, and you test with thyroid hormone every 6 weeks when you're trying to get a dose. It takes only about 5 days to 2 weeks for the active form of thyroid, T3, to go in and out of your system. So if you use Armour Thyroid, which has T3, you'll feel some effect within 3 or 5 days. But the full effect will be 6 weeks, because that's when T4 hits your system. And I guarantee it's like one day you don't feel, you know, you feel low. The next day it's 6 weeks and you feel different. It's that strong. And once you've overdosed, it's hard to get the dose down again. You have to go slowly. You have to do it. You don't want to like shock your system, because when you do that, your thyroid gets inflamed and you get thyroid symptoms like anxiety and depression. You start dropping things, and you either feel, like I said, homicidal if you're too high, and suicidal, very depressed, if you're too low. So it's not, you have to be very patient with thyroid, particularly if there's a disease problem, if there's actually inflammation in the gland. You have to take it very slow and be very careful. And you have to look at your nutrient density. You have to control your stress and fatigue. And remember that if you do have a thyroid disorder, one of these sorts, and you expose yourself to a lot of irritants, like stress, fatigue, and environmental exposures, you will get an exasperation of your thyroid symptoms. It's like being an asthmatic, except that your symptoms will be thyroid symptoms. So you'll have alternating symptoms of fatigue and being wired and having insomnia and all these nasty symptoms, emotional symptoms, very hard to do, very hard to treat. So you have to be extremely patient with yourself and watch out for your exposures to environmental pollutants, chemicals, radiation, and metals. And that's it for today. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about your own health and fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our archive, CD copies, lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out. We're also on Facebook at Your Own Health and Fitness, or Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. Our information number is 707-874-2772, email admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom. Pray for our pups.